If there's one thing that I know in life, it's what it feels like to have unpopular opinions. For better or worse, I would say mostly for the worse, it seems like literally anything that I say, no matter how hard I try, sometimes I have something to say and I'm like, okay, I'm going to be careful to say this in a way that doesn't make people mad because I'm tired of people hating me and making some Reddit thread with 150 comments about what a terrible person I am. It gets a little bit old. And yet somehow, no matter how hard I try, people still get mad at me. But you know what? I'm not the only one out there with unpopular opinions. So I thought today we could talk about some of your unpopular opinions. I thought that would be fun because I'm not the only person out there with deeply, deeply unpopular opinions in my case. But let's take a look at some of yours. So I asked on Twitter, I said, give me your hot takes or questions and we'll talk about them. So that's what we're going to do. And really quickly, I also wanted to mention my Patreon. If you like what I do on YouTube and everywhere else, joining my Patreon really helps me do this full time and worry less about videos getting demonetized by YouTube or copyright claimed by labels. Patrons get all my podcasts and main channel videos early. There are members only channels in my Discord that I'm super active in. I also do giveaways. For example, I've been giving away a lot of Emo's Not Dead merch. And you can also have me review your music, artwork, or anything else. All you need to do is join my Patreon at the $10 level, and then every month I do a call for submissions. If you want me to review something, just drop it in the comments of that post, and then I will review it live on Twitch. So if any of that sounds cool to you, hit the link in the description of this video, and I appreciate your support.
The first one from Tyree Hoffman is, hot take, punk would have completely fizzled out in the late 90s or early 2000s if Blink hadn't brought light to the scene. I feel like this is not really a hot take. I feel like this is just sort of, I feel like this is kind of a cold take, I think, but I don't know. It's definitely true because remember, pop punk, you know, there was Green Day in like 94. The Offspring also came out in 94. Both of them, you know, continued to have some success, but you know, the genre by like the late 90s wasn't really doing much. You know what I mean? There wasn't really a lot going on. By like 99, Green Day had really kind of fallen off. They put out Warning and Nimrod, which I guess some people these days like, but at the time, really not too many people liked. And yeah, the genre was sort of on its last legs, I think. It felt like it was one of those things. You know, it's like, oh, that was cool for a couple years, and now it's not cool anymore. And then Blink came along. All the Small Things came out in 99, I think, right? And, like, that became one of the most popular, like, mainstream songs of the year. No question. It was all over TRL. Like, that song was absolutely huge, and that really, like, reignited the whole, you know, genre again and put all the other stuff on the map, like Good Charlotte, Sum 41, Newfound Glory, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I don't know if this is a hot take or an unpopular opinion, but it's definitely a fact. No question about that. Blink 182 saved pop punk. That is a fact. Okay, now this one I know is a hot one. This is a hot take here from Alex. CS by Lil Uzi Vert is better than Chop Suey by System of a Down. If you haven't heard it, we'll check it out. CS, Lil Uzi Vert, his cover of System of a Down. This is definitely a take. I am a confirmed, admitted System of a Down disliker. I think System of a Down is kind of mid. I think they're kind of overrated. I think System of a Down is one of those bands that elder emos and millennials love because they heard System of a Down when they were 13 and they think System of a Down is the pinnacle of music because of that, just for pure nostalgia reasons. And I don't think that Chop Suey is an amazing song, but this one is absolutely terrible. I would choose the original over this 100 out of 100 times. If Finn thinks your take is hot, it's fucking scorching. Now, he may be trolling. I don't know. Either way, that is a deeply unpopular opinion. That is for sure. But I don't think I can agree with that one. Even I, you know that your opinion is indeed hot if even I cannot sign off on it. A question from John Boone. Do you think Taylor Swift could or would move into another genre? Well, she already did, because remember, Taylor Swift started out as country's sweetheart. You remember, like, you remember You Belong With Me back in the day? Old school Taylor Swift, right? Really, it was always kind of more pop than country, but still. And people were mad. The country fans were mad with, I think, 1989 is the one, or maybe it was Red. I don't remember which one. One of those albums, they were mad because she was like easily the biggest thing in country at the time. And she went pop and they were mad. They felt like she betrayed.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan. And this is the Corner of Gray Street Podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the Corner of Gray Street.
Hey, this is Aaron from No Simple Road. I'm inviting you to come hang out with Apple, Mel, and I as we talk with the musicians, artists, chefs, authors, and beyond from the world that turns us on. We're reaching into the improvisational music scene, the psychedelic culture, the festival world, and getting to know what makes the people tick that create those scenes. Come join us on the long, strange trip over at No Simple Road.
The country scene, they're like, no, Taylor, we need you. We need you to keep saving country. That was the reaction at the time. And obviously she went totally pop. Not that she was ever like, quote unquote, like real country to begin with. It's not like she was ever, you know, fucking Johnny Cash or Sturgill Simpson or something like that. But she went full pop after that. And then I feel like she went kind of indie, like with Folklore, and I forget the name of the new album, Eras. I feel like she kind of went indie. So she kind of already has changed genres twice, I think. So could she do it again? Absolutely. Sure. Why not? I mean, why not? What we need is the Taylor Swift ska era. That's what I think. I want Taylor Swift to go ska, or maybe start another swing revival. That's what I need in my life. The Taylor Swift ska album. Next one. Oh, this is a tough one. Nick, Master of Tilt, wants to know, which is better, brutal technical death metal or technical brutal death metal? And man, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. You know, really, I would need at least an hour to fully answer this question. It's so hard to tell. It's like choosing one of your children. If someone's like, hey, would you rather kill your daughter or your son? Especially with brutal technical death metal and technical brutal death metal. I mean, they're so different. How can you even compare them? You know, that's like saying, do you like pizza or, I don't know, getting a haircut? You know, these are just so radically different. How could you even compare the two? They couldn't be more different. You know, a lot of people only listen to one kind of music. You know, you look at their Spotify and it's just all metalcore or all hip hop or something like that. But me, I have just really incredibly broad taste. I will listen to anything from We Came As Romans to Memphis May Fire, personally. Like, that's me. I'm just, you're like, whoa, buddy, how can you have Memphis May Fire and We Came As Romans on the same playlist? You're a crazy man. What's wrong with you? There's something, you've got something, you got a screw loose, buddy. And when I tell people that I like brutal technical death metal and technical brutal death metal, that's how they look at me. They're like, what? How can you possibly like such completely different genres of music? But somehow I do it. That's just how I am, guys. That's just how I am. I'm a wild and crazy guy. Hard to believe, I know, but it's true. How about this one? This is an interesting question. From Zenith, I have a unique one. Since you seem to be a nerd with subcultures, what's your stance on the modern furry community? And would you argue that they are the new scene kids, especially Sparkle Dogs, which in essence are just scene kid cartoon animals? I don't know what Sparkle Dogs are, but we're about to find out. I hope I don't get TOS'd. Okay, a Sparkle Dog is a fictional canine character that generally sports strikingly bright colors and patterns on its body,
unusual physical features, wings, horns, etc., human-style head hair, and or man-made accessories. Okay, let's hope we don't get TOS'd here. Oh, wow. Okay, this does look pretty seen, doesn't it? Very interesting. Okay, Rainbow Factory, he, she, this is apparently a Sparkle Dog. It certainly does look very seen. Well, I'll tell you what, I don't know what Sparkle Dogs are, but I think I get the idea. When I think about furries, what I think about is this. The autocomplete, by the way, when I type in Sonic, the autocomplete is Sonic the Hedgehog farting. That tells you what a dedicated fan I am of this genre. Now look at this. It's not just one image. There's like dozens and dozens of Sonic farting. Oh, look at this. So one thing I didn't realize, furries are almost all millennials. Like, you don't see, you know, maybe like borderline, you know, Gen Xers, but it's kind of a millennial thing. And I feel like that's because they probably grew up in the era in which, you know, their sort of reference material was popular. I don't know. They got warped by Cartoon Network. That's what I think it is. So what do I think about furries? I would say furries are probably the absolute bottom of the food chain of subcultures, right? Like, you know, metalheads are bad, juggalos are worse, furries are the bottom. Bronies are maybe even worse than furries. That's true. But, you know, they're kind of like, yeah, computer nerd. Yes, they're always like very smart and nerdy. But I feel like furry and brony are really just sort of two variations of the same thing. Either way, what do I think of furries? And are they the new scene kids? I feel like I already know too much about furries. That's my answer to that question. I already know far, far more about furries, and my search history is already full of far more about furries than it should be. That's what I think. Got another hot take from James Cazares. Rap is more creative than all guitar music these days, and it's not even close. Now, if you would have given me this take 5 to 8 years ago, I absolutely would have agreed with you. I mean, I've talked about this before, but like the 2016 to 2019 era of rap, to me, is like some of the coolest, most creative experimental music ever. Like when all the, you know, the face tattoo Lil guys were coming out, right? For example, of course, your man Lil Pump, or as Donald Trump called him, Little Pimp. Little Pimp, Big MAGA Steppin', one of his best songs. A classic, very underrated Lil Pimp, Lil Pump Pimp, song. Lil Pimp, ooh, Lil Pimp, it does Pimp, slam. Ooh, it's great. Right around town with a thick bitch. For sure, that era of hip hop to me was some of the coolest stuff. And obviously all the trap metal and emo rap, you know, like Suicide Boys and Lil Peep and all that kind of stuff was super cool. Like that was probably one of the most exciting eras of music to me. And then on the more mainstream level, stuff like Migos and 21 Savage, maybe Fetty Wap might have been the beginning of that. It was when like some really genuinely like weird stuff was happening in music that was getting super, super popular. You know, like Lil Pump writes these songs that are like, you know, almost like grindcore in the sense that they're super short. They're just like totally like brain dead, zero nuance or finesse. It's just like come in, kick you in the balls, and then leave in a minute and a half. It was super cool. And then, you know, Playboi Carti as well, that kind of stuff. But I feel like around 2019, rap started to get a lot less interesting to me when melodic trap took over as kind of the dominant sound. I feel like the song that kind of ruined it to me, I think, was The Box. Do you remember when this song just fucking blew up? This was like the biggest song of the year. I feel like after this song came out, everything sounded like this. And this is a good song. And I like Roddy Ricch. But I feel like everything since then has basically sounded like this. It's cool for a couple people to do it, but it's just everybody is doing it. Either that or drill. And I don't think drill is good music for the most part. Like, I mean, it's okay, but I think the appeal of drill is more about the lore and like the street stories behind the artist than it is the music. You know, people listen to drill because of the crazy stuff that the artist does as much as they do the song or more. And with Melodic Trap, I don't think that's entirely the case, but it all just kind of sounds the same to me. So I feel like this was very true a few years ago, but I don't know that it's true now. I feel like guitar music and hip hop right now are in kind of like a boring place, personally. That's what I think. So I'm going to disagree with this one. I see your point, and it's not wrong, but I don't think I totally agree with it. Okay, another one from PR. Hyperpop is the new pop punk. Every slightly alternative high schooler is at least somewhat into hyperpop, be it Blades hip hop or even mainstream artists like Charlie XCX. It's slowly going through all the phases and genres that pop punk did in the 90s. Well, I can't comment on what high schoolers are into because I don't hang out with any high school kids. So I can't comment on that. But I feel like hyperpop came and went very quickly. I feel like hyperpop has been kind of dead for a while. I think it peaked with Charlie XCX's album, How I'm Feeling Right Now. This was like the peak of it, I think. And it was cool. I love this album. I love this era of Charlie. It's awesome. I think people will probably look at this as like the peak of the genre, I think. Because really, I mean, it's still around, but it feels like sort of the creativity is gone. It feels like a lot of people moved on from it. And there's really no breakthrough star. Sophie died, rest in peace, who was a very important part of this. A.G. Cook had a label called PC Music that was also very like big part of this. And that label's gone. 100 Gex are kind of the only people still, you know, they're kind of the biggest artists in the genre. And I feel like they don't even really do hyperpop exactly. And they're not that popular. I mean, respect to them, but they're really not that big. So I don't know. I disagree with this one. I think if you asked me this question 2 years ago, I might have agreed with you. But unfortunately, I think hyperpop is kind of just done. You know, there are hyperpop kind of influences, I think, probably in a lot of stuff, but I think the genre and the scene, unfortunately, is just kind of over. Made an impact. I think people look back on it as being something that was really cool, but I think it's kind of over, unfortunately. Next one from Matt. Will anyone care about Oliver Anthony by 2025? Good question. For those of you who don't know, this was one of my, speaking of unpopular opinions, you guys may know this guy. He had this song that came out a little while ago. Rich Men, North of Richmond. I guess a month ago already. That was fast.
I've been selling my soul.
Redneck Social Distortion.
Overtime.
This guy.
For bullshit pays.
Will anybody care about him in 5 years? The thing with any artist like this that has sort of like a huge like breakout song, like basically viral hit out of nowhere. You know, this has 73 million views in a month. Just put out on some guy's random YouTube channel. The question is, can he ride this wave or is he just going to go away and he'll be a one-hit wonder? It feels like people kind of already don't care, but you never know. Like if he can just come out with one more good song, maybe he'll be like Lil Nas X, you know, who Lil Nas X isn't necessarily the biggest artist in the world, but he's certainly still relevant. After the election, nobody will care. I think that's, that's a good point. What I think is funny is that all the MAGA people want him to be their guy. You know, they all want him to be like the MAGA mascot. And he's like very clearly said many times, like, I'm not conservative. Like I wrote this song about, you know, Republicans too. Like I'm not that guy. They don't seem to care. The liberals, everybody wants him to be that guy. You know, the progressives wanted to be that guy too. And he's not. So yeah, I mean, I think this guy's cringe. He seems like he's not a particularly intelligent guy, which is the difference between him and Lil Nas X. Lil Nas X is brilliant. He's a super smart guy. And so I think he was able to capitalize on that because he understood the internet. He understood what was happening and he was able to do something with that. This Oliver Anthony guy just seems like, you know, a little on the dumb side. I like that dog though. It's a top-notch dog. I don't think anyone's going to care about him in 5 years, but who knows? We'll see. But he just seems like kind of not a particularly smart guy, so I don't think he'll do it. Why was Lars right about Napster? You don't get enough hate. Oh, I get plenty of hate, that's for sure. But why was Lars right about Napster? Well, I think everybody, I don't even know if this is a hot take though, because I feel like everybody now realizes that Lars was right. It was very cringe, I will say that. But if you remember, what happened was Napster came out back in 1999. Then Metallica became sort of the face of hating Napster. The problem is that everybody at the time, including me, loved Napster. So Metallica basically got Napster sued out of existence, and people were not happy about it.
Hey, frat boy.
What the hell do you think you're doing, man?
Holy crap! You're freaking logged on from Metallica! I love everything you do! Except for that bad show you hosted.
You know what? Maybe I wouldn't have to whore myself out if you f***ing kids didn't steal my music.
Whoa.
I mean, he was right. He was right. Everybody loved Napster because it was free music, right? Like, why wouldn't you want that? When Napster came out, that's when I stopped buying music. I used to buy music all the time. It came out in 99 and I just stopped because, like, why would I ever pay for music again? You know? And so he was right. It really did, like, pretty much completely destroy the music industry, or came very close to it. Like, if you look at a chart of like music industry revenue over the years, like in 2000 or 2001, I think was the peak. And then after that, after Napster and LimeWire and Kazaa and all those other things that, you know, you would download some song thinking it was the new Limp Bizkit song, and then it was just like Bill Clinton farting or something like that, mistitled. But yeah, it just like basically took all the money out of the music industry until Spotify came along in 2011, I think is when it came out in the United States. And only until, I want to say 2016 or something like that, is when the music industry finally recovered from Napster. So Lars was totally right. He's just one of these people, kind of like, I feel like Lars and I are kindred spirits, because I say a lot of things that are right, but because I come off like a pompous asshole, a lot of people don't want to hear it. And so even though they know I'm right, they still hate me anyway. They hated him because he spoke the truth. That's me and Lars. That's our struggle. I just want to call Lars and say, Lars, I know your struggle, man. You and me, we're in the same boat. We're kindred spirits. And just give him a big hug. And just let him cry. Just let him cry. And just, you know, I'll just hold him. Just let him cry and say, shh, it's okay. It's okay, Lars. Just, it's okay, man. It's okay, Lars. All right, well, that does it for this edition of me reacting to your deeply unpopular opinions. Hopefully now Reddit will hate you as much as they hate me. Join us next time for Volume 2. Oh, wow. Okay. This does look pretty seen, doesn't it?
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Frates from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective. The only podcast you crank up to 11.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King in Off-Road Minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.